Hello, Bulls Nation. Welcome to another episode of the Rebuildable Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Gentile. And today we have a very special guest from Australia joining us from the Bulls HQ podcast and contributor from Bloggable, Mark Karanzoulis. He's been around the blogosphere and podcasting world probably for the last 5 years or so. Mark is very opinionated, and I thought it's the perfect type of person to have on this podcast to lay out a rebuilding plan from start to finish. You might not agree with everything he has to say, but he always brings well-informed opinions to every take that he gives. Now, before he laid out his rebuilding plan, I asked him about what got him started into blogging and podcasting about the Bulls, and here's what he had to share about that.
Basically, the root of all this thing is me just being a very opinionated Bulls fan and having spent years and years and years online on forums talking about this team, probably for the last 15 to 20 years, I guess. At some point, it turned into from posting onto forums into blogging, which then turned into podcasting about the team. So it's sort of been a gradual step-by-step process, I suppose, but I spent the bulk of my time just posting on forums, just trying to connect with Bulls fans all over the globe. And me being in Australia, there's obviously less Bulls fans here than there are in Chicago. So I had to sort of rely on the internet, and that's why I started posting on forums just constantly about this Bulls team. But eventually, probably 5-6 years ago, maybe something like that, that turned into blogging. And then, you know, maybe 3-4 years ago, maybe a little longer, I can't actually remember, but it turned into podcasting.
Yeah, and I know the Bulls HQ pod, that started around the time of the Three Alphas, correct?
Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah, so what's that, 3 years ago now, something like that. But prior to that, I had another Bulls podcast, Dennis Podman with Morten Jensen and Kevin Ferrigan, two people your listeners may recognize from Bulls Twitter. So I had that in place for maybe a year and a half beforehand too. So yeah, this is my second Bulls podcast. I'm on my own now, but yeah.
And what was the motivation though for spinning off your own podcast for the Three Alphas of all things?
I think it just came down to, again, me being opinionated about this team. My former co-hosts were probably braver and stronger than I was, in the sense that they didn't necessarily want to devote as much time to the team as what I wanted to, I guess. And I mean, you know, all the power to those guys. They made probably the right decision in expending less energy than needed on a bad Bulls team. But unfortunately, I was weak, and I can't seem to succumb this team no matter how bad things get. And yeah, like I said, I remain an opinionated Bulls fan and wanted to keep talking about them. So I went out and just kept talking about them on my own podcast.
So, of course, now you did mention that, you know, you are from Australia. What was what is it that got you into the Bulls growing up?
Oh, typical bandwagon stuff, mate. I mean, the NBA really started to take off, I guess, in the 80s and 90s here. Well, not just in Australia, but globally. So for me, growing up as a 90s kid, the impetus was really Michael Jordan, and he was the global icon. He established the Bulls as a global brand. So being a young and impressionable kid at the time, Michael Jordan and the Bulls were the main NBA team that was sort of coming down here to Australia. So it was pretty hard not to be a Bulls fan if you were growing up in that era, I guess. Maybe there were some Orlando Magic fans in there and a couple others, maybe some Lakers too, but they're predominantly the teams that were sort of being fed to us here. And obviously the game's grown to just a completely different level now. But I'm a typical bandwagon in the sense that I jumped on the Michael Jordan bandwagon back in the 90s. And yeah, it's been that way ever since.
The Bulls are such a global brand. And I mean, you probably know this from your podcast too. When you start seeing the metrics of people that download and listen, it is, you get listeners from all over the globe. And I was going to say, I get a fair amount from Australia. Is that just you, or are there more fans too doing that?
Well, I mean, I've definitely tuned into your show before, but I'm tipping this, it's not just me, because there are quite a lot of Bulls fans here in Australia. But I mean, the NBA truly is a global game, and you know, that obviously the sport, well, the NBA itself, the teams are just residing in the States, but you've got viewers and listeners and whatever it may be, consuming content and just watching games from all over the globe. So basketball truly is a global game, and the Bulls are one of the biggest brands, one of the biggest teams going around. A lot of that is obviously owed to the dynasty years, to Michael Jordan. Sometimes I wonder where this team would be if Michael Jordan was maybe a trailblazer or you know, was selected by some other team and wasn't a Bull, I wonder where we would be as a franchise. But fortunately, he was a Bull, and I think, yeah, many people have reaped the rewards of it. I mean, just us talking about it now, like I said, I'm from Australia. I mean, Melbourne, Australia, talking to you, you in Chicago. It's kind of insane to think about it when you take a step back and, you know, apply some perspective as to here we are talking about some team in Chicago, even though I'm on the other side of the world, basically. It's kind of nuts.
So actually, I'm located in the suburbs of Chicago. I'm actually in the same suburb as one of your favorite people, C. Red Fred.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
We can actually hear him shouting a lot around here. It's crazy. He's our town barker.
Have you called the police?
You know, I don't want the police to have to deal with that. Like, let them focus on more higher priorities than Fred.
Fair call.
So, first question before we dive deep into to rebuilding efforts. If I'm giving you the job as an executive, are you staying in Australia or are you going to come to Chicago to run this team?
Well, I mean, this is an interesting point. I mean, Jerry Reinsdorf, he lives in Arizona, doesn't he? If I'm not mistaken. So, Michael's technically, I guess, running the show these days. But if Jerry can own the team and can run the show from Arizona, surely I can do it from Australia. Just Skype in. You know, we've got the technology to get it done. Is my point. So, I think I can stay here whilst still managing the operation.
Okay. Now, can you smoke cigars like the chairman does when you're sitting remotely?
Definitely not. I wouldn't pick up a cigar. I don't have those chops on me, so he's got me covered there.
So I'll take on the role of the Reinsdorf family. I've officially decided that I am firing Gar Forman in his role as GM. I am moving John Paxson to some ambassador role that, you know, gets handed out a lot in the Bulls organization. And I'm deciding to make you the executive VP of basketball operations, Mark. What's your first order of business in that role?
Well, I mean, I guess the first thing would be installing some sort of analytically focused GM. I think that would be my first order of business. I think the Bulls in the past were able to get by on things where, you know, the margins, the operating on the margins, you know, in terms of in terms of moves where they were able to maybe sell second round picks in the past and maybe not, you know, get hemorrhaged by in the past or not see it as a potential asset in the past as other teams currently do right now. I think as teams have gotten more smarter, as the NBA has become a bigger brand and become a more focused brand, and as teams have just got generally smarter about how they apply and approach things, I think those things on the margins really do count. And I brought up second round picks, but that's just one instance. But I mean, we can talk about a ton more. But in terms of like trading bad contracts for first round picks, I don't think the Bulls have done enough of that. So I think just really playing those margins and playing the analytics game a little bit better. I mean, there's no way you can look at Jim Boylan's offense last season and say the way it sort of was culminated had anything to do with an analytical approach. And that's not to say that the Bulls have to be the Houston Rockets, but I think they need to apply a different lens as to what they're currently going down. So I would be trying to install a young up-and-coming GM that has more of an analytics focus, someone who can sort of operate on those margins and find competitive advantages in that space. And from there, just flow that methodology down on from, you know, from the GM to the coaching staff, to the type of player you target, and try to really, I guess, leverage the fact that Chicago is a big market team and you do have, I guess, the ability or the resources to attract certain players that probably other teams don't. But I think the Bulls are sort of lacking in that area at the moment because they're kind of, it feels like they're kind of okay in operating like a mid-market team. So I think the Bulls, they should really sort of go away with that. Like we sort of spoke before, they're a global brand. They're one of the biggest teams in the NBA. I think they need to actually start acting like it.
Before we get into Jim Boylan, though, one thing you brought up that you want to build an analytical front office here. Is there a team that you're looking to tap into those resources to find that GM?
I mean, it's kind of hard to say because we are on the outside. So, I mean, you can read about, you know, names, these young hotshot GMs that are sort of going around that potentially may be good, but it's kind of hard to say if they would be good until they're kind of in the situation. So In that sense, us as fans have quite a big degree of separation from the executives in place, and it's hard for us to say who should be in place or who shouldn't be. But that's not to say, that doesn't mean we can't say that maybe there should be a change. So in that situation, I guess it's kind of problematic because you're able to identify a problem, but you're not necessarily able to offer a solution. And I don't know if it's necessarily up to us to offer a solution either. So I don't know who the best name would be, but I think given that John Paxson at least has been at the helm for 16, going on 17 years now without no substantive winning, I guess, I think now would be the time for change. But right now, as we're going around, so the Minnesota Timberwolves have brought in Gersan Rosas from the Houston Rockets, who comes in with quite a bit of acclaim, quite a lot of praise, and has worked under the exact type of front office that I just sort of spoke about before under the Houston Rockets. So that would be the type of move I would be looking for. Similarly, Tim Connolly is getting a job here, it looks like, with the Washington Wizards. He's a young up-and-coming executive as well, and not necessarily up and coming. He's been doing it for quite a while, but we can obviously see what he's done in Denver and the type of team he's built in Denver. I think you need to almost target those sorts of teams and target their process and see what they're doing and try to install that in Chicago. I mean, even Chicago's little brother, the Milwaukee Bucks, they completely, I guess, changed up and revitalized their organization. They went from basically a 500 team to the best team in the league by just doing some of the simple things that I'm sort of suggesting here. And I think there's a lot of case studies out there that the Bulls could be following, and a lot of them happen to be in the small to mid-tier markets. And I think those teams need to really play with those competitive advantages because they don't necessarily have the luxuries like a team like Chicago has. But if the Bulls were to use their size and scale whilst also applying that mindset, it's kind of scary to think what they could be if they maybe took it a little bit more seriously.
So let's say in this hypothetical world, you're inheriting Jim Boylan's now new 3-year contract. What is the decision you're going to make there? Are you going to keep him around for at least part of that contract since he's owed money on it? Or are you going to just say, hey, you know what, let's eat the money and find our next guy?
Well, I mean, that's probably an ownership decision more so than a front office decision because it's not my money as a basketball executive. So, I mean, as much as he wouldn't be my coach, if the ownership doesn't want to, throw away his contract or, just scrap his deal and bring in someone else, then it's probably more so an ownership decision than it is a basketball ops decision. So, I don't know. I guess the ownership would have to answer that question first, but assuming they would allow me to do that, then I probably would explore that situation because right now there are some potential candidates that I would have liked to explore. Some of them have been already signed by other teams, but I think Dave Yeager, if I'm not mistaken, is still without a job. He would have been someone that I would definitely have been interested in. I don't know why they committed to Boylan so quickly, and I'm not sure if there's any real evidence to suggest that what we saw based on this season was worthy of a 3-year extension. I think they definitely needed to give him a raise at least for next season. He was contracted for next season, so rather than paying him like an assistant for next season, if you wanted to bring him back next season, at least pay him like a head coach, but to give him a 3-year extension, I don't see what tangible justification there is for that. But yeah, I would have moved on.
Makes no sense to me, and I've seen you tweet about this too, and I wholeheartedly agree. I don't get why you're not at least going through a coaching search. It's two straight coaching hires where you haven't done a coaching search.
Yeah, on some levels, I guess you have to respect it to a degree because I guess they feel confident in their guy, that they have their guy in their building, and the Bulls like to reference their building quite a bit, and the fact that us outsiders don't know what's necessarily going on in their building, which I guess is true. But at the same time, it does also reek of incompetence in the sense that they didn't do a coaching search for Fred Hoiberg. We saw how that turned out. They brought in Jim Boylan to work under Fred Hoiberg. We know this Bulls team is notorious in bringing on first-time coaches because they are often cheaper. And we've obviously seen them instate Jim Boylan as the interim head coach. Well, not even as the interim head coach. He never had that tag, but they've essentially made him their full-time head coach without doing a head coaching search. And if we're to go by the contract term, he'll be here for another 3 years as the head coach, which will mean for 4 to 7 years, this team basically hasn't done a head coaching search. They've just picked the guy they wanted, haven't necessarily played the field and to see what's necessarily out there. And like I said, that you have to appreciate it on some level that they've got confidence in their own guys to really sort of promote with from within. But at the same time, if you're just doing that and not necessarily exploring what every other team is doing or what other teams have to offer in terms of their assistants or even their head coaches, then again, I talked about margins of error and playing those margins rather. I think that's an example where the Bulls aren't necessarily doing that.
So now let's say you have your front office in place, you have your philosophy set. Now you're evaluating the current core, and that current core, we, you know, as Bulls fans, we look at Lauri Markkanen, Zach LaVine, Wendell Carter Jr. Let's start with Wendell Carter. Where do you think his ceiling can be going down the road?
So I think I've mentioned it on my podcast a couple of times, but I think Wendell Carter Jr. actually has the potential to be the best player on this team based on the players that are currently on this team. And I know that might seem like a hot take, but I just look at this Bulls roster and I don't see a lot of two-way contributors. And I think Wendell Carter Jr. can be one of the best two-way players in the NBA at some point in his career. And if we're to glean anything from those Al Horford comparisons, which I think for most part are kind of apt, Al Horford is one of the better two-way players in the NBA. So I think there is value in that versus someone like Lauri Markkanen, who might end up being okay on defense, but I don't think he's ever going to be anything more than that whilst being hopefully a very good offensive player. But I think when you're factoring in a combination of everything that you need to do on a basketball court, I think there's potential for Wendell Carter Jr. to be the best player on this Bulls team. That's not to say he's going to be a top 30 player or a top 40 player, but I think he could be potentially the best player on this Bulls roster because I think he has the potential to just be an amazing, incredible defender. And I think his passing game is severely underrated. And I think once he is empowered to be something more on offense, which is something that I think the Bulls made a mistake in doing during his rookie season, they didn't empower him enough. I think once they do, and I'm hoping they do, then we're going to see a different Wendell Carter Jr.
What do you think about Lauri and Zach? What are their ceilings, you know, in the next couple of seasons?
Well, I mean, yeah, this is an interesting one because it kind of depends on where the league is going. So Lauri Markkanen, I think, is more of a power forward than a center. But I think to maximize his true value, he's probably going to need to be a center, but I don't know if he can necessarily play at center. So that's kind of an interesting question to ask or ponder with Lauri Markkanen. So I think we like to assume that the Markkanen-Carter combination for the next 10 years will be in place and that we don't necessarily need to worry about that going forward. But if the league continues to downsize, and maybe it will, maybe it won't, but maybe Lauri Markkanen's best position is at center going forward. I think if that's the case and you have to shift him to center, I think whilst that works offensively, it can be quite problematic defensively. So that's something to monitor. But I think Lauri can be a 20-10 type of guy. I think he can be one of the better offensive players in this league, even though his numbers may not necessarily, he may not be scoring, you know, 27 a game, let's say, but I think just based purely on gravity and what he can do as a pick and pop option in spacing the floor, I think he can be a real offensive weapon. But I don't know. I don't see a huge ceiling for Lauri Markkanen as to say we're looking at a top 15 player or a top 20 player, let's say. I don't think that's probably not his ceiling. Same thing with Zach LaVine. I think he took huge strides this season. He's obviously come a long way, and I think he's clearly shown that he's a starting caliber player in this league. He can score the basketball quite easily. I think as a jump shooter, he has more scope as well because he's been on the ball so much that we sort of forget that this guy can sort of play off ball too and can be one of the better sort of movers without the ball. But I guess that can't happen in Chicago because there's no one really justifiably able to take the ball out of Zach's hands at the moment. But I think he has scope to improve too. But I don't think in either player you've got a marquee guy, a guy that you're comfortable in saying they're going to be a top 15 or top 20 player. So I think the Bulls, what they're doing right now is they're building a really good team, a really nice team, building organically through the draft, one that could probably get to a 45 to a 50 win rate. But I think when you sort of start thinking beyond that, that's when it gets a little bit more grey.
Yeah, and that's interesting. I know you brought that up on Twitter, and I think I might have replied to that. That I agree that it's very reminiscent of the Baby Bulls from the early 2000s. And I think that they're always trying to build this team that's organic and hoping that some type of star just says, you know what, I'm going to go play over there. For you, though, how would you approach that, knowing that you have these type of players? What are you doing to add to that, maybe maximize their potential, or find that big fish to really maximize this team's title hopes?
I mean, it's tough. Like, without some luck, I don't know if a real path exists. I mean, John Paxson says luck and hope isn't necessarily a strategy, but if you look around the league, then and who's competing for titles right now, it basically boils down to luck. I mean, Giannis turning into what he did from a number 15 pick into potentially the MVP of the league, then that took a lot of luck. I mean, Steph Curry developing into what he did and changing and revolutionizing the game the way he did, that took luck. The Toronto Raptors, they acquired the assets to put themselves in a position to maybe get into that luck game, but they were able to get into the Kawhi Leonard sweepstakes and were able to get their star through that means. And I think that's probably the most appropriate way for the Bulls to land that superstar player. I think you got to just be in the mindset now where you're accumulating these good players, these good assets, and hopefully you can package maybe one or two of these guys to bring in the next disgruntled star who is a legitimate star. I think that's probably the most likely way that this is going to happen, outside of one, draft luck, or two, one of your players just taking a step that no one really foreseen. But I think at the moment, based on what we're seeing from these Bulls players right now, I don't think any of them is screaming top 10 player. I'm sure there's Bulls fans out there that disagree with me on that one, but probably specifically with Lauri Markkanen. But I think if one of these guys at least looked like being a top 10 guy, we probably would have seen glimpses of it by now. But at least in my opinion, I don't think we've seen that. So I think it's probably going to need to come through a trade. Because as we saw, the Bulls fell from number 4 to number 7 in the draft. Now, I mean, maybe the most optimistic Bulls fans think that potentially the number 7 pick that we draft here could end up being that real game changer. I think if we're just playing the probability game, that's probably not happening. So I think the most realistic situation is just sort of accumulating this nice pieces and getting a collection of guys that other teams may sort of be interested in the sense that when someone like Anthony Davis or an equivalent Kawhi Leonard, whoever it may be, comes up via trade, that you have the necessary assets to sort of book it in and at least put yourself in the game that way. I think that's probably the most likely case or the most likely chance that the Bulls have in landing one of those top 10 players, which I was speaking about before. I don't think it's coming from within. I know John Paxson has spoken about the need for the guys to really improve internally, and I'm sure they will. But improving to an extent of, you know, being a top 10 guy, I think is unlikely. So without some luck in the draft, then you need some luck in the trade game. And the only way you really get into that game is by just accumulating good pieces and putting it all together and then just hoping that the right trade comes around, just as it did with the Houston Rockets when they acquired James Harden.
Well, I think that what you just said, though, is exactly – I think that's – it's kind of where the Bulls kind of, though, dead end. You're at least trying to come up with a way to create your own luck down the road by trying to acquire more assets, spinning a player you might have that's on the fringe but maybe overperforms and turning it into more assets. And I think that's something where the Bulls right now, as currently constructed, just dead end, where kind of the scenario you're presenting is one where you would try to keep accumulating those assets, and if the opportunity comes via the trade market, which happens a lot in the NBA, you can be able to pounce. I want to get into, though, the number 7 pick, since you brought it up. You know, you're going to be inheriting that. So are you keeping it? Are you trading up, trading down, maybe using it in a trade for a player?
Yeah, I'm probably not inclined to trade it for a veteran. I know there's been a lot of talk, for whatever reason, about Mike Conley, not just for the Bulls, but for a lot of teams. Who are in need of a point guard, Mike Conley, Drew Holiday, these sorts of players. I definitely wouldn't be trading that pick for that type of player because I don't know what the point of that is. I think that's a one-way ticket to being a 44, 45 win team and not really becoming anything more than that. And maybe that's what the Bulls end up being regardless. But I don't know why you'd want to trade a pick for a veteran like that who is earning a heap of money and isn't necessarily going to improve your ceiling. I think it's just probably more of it's probably a quicker path to getting back into the playoffs, but anything beyond that, I don't think it really makes sense. So I'm not trading the pick for a veteran as such. I'd probably just rather draft someone and add it to the core. And like I said, just start accumulating more of these good players on rookie contracts, assuming that number seven pick actually turns into a good player. Am I trading up? It would really depend on where I'm trading up to. If I'm trading up to two, then that's something I'd consider. Obviously, the Pelicans aren't giving you number one, but if I'm trading up from seven to five, then it really depends who's available left on the board. But I think the trade up answer is going to be a draft day situation where, let's just call it Jarrett Culver, let's say. If he's falling and he slides to number seven, then I probably don't trade the pick. But if for whatever reason my only options at number seven are Cam Reddish and Kobe White or names to that those sorts of names, then I don't know, maybe I'm more inclined to trade. But at the same time, it's not the greatest draft, so I don't know. It really depends what that additional asset would need to be. So I'm kind of lukewarm on the idea of trading. I think it should be in play. I don't think it's something that definitely needs to happen, but it should be at least considered. But to that note as well, trading back's also an option. So I don't know what the exact answer is right now as to what the Bulls should be doing with that number seven pick. I think they should be exploring quite a few different avenues, but I think ultimately it's going to be determined by who is on the board come June 21 and who is taken where. Maybe some teams reach on a player and the player that you really like falls to you at number seven, so there's no real need to trade up, trade down, trade out, those sorts of scenarios. But the one thing that I am pretty firm on, or at least pretty comfortable in thinking, is I'm not trading the number seven pick for, a 28-year-old player who's not necessarily on the timeline of LaVine, Markkanen, Carter, etc.
I'm going to throw out a crazy hypothetical at you. You're going to notice this a lot. I like to throw out a lot of hypotheticals. So let's say the Memphis Grizzlies call and they have the number two pick, and for some reason they really like Zach LaVine, and they say to you, Chicago, we're willing to give you the number two pick, but you have to take on the contract of Chandler Parsons, and we'll take the number seven and Zach LaVine. Would you do that?
How many years does Chandler Parsons' contract have? Only one more?
I have one more year on it.
I would definitely do that if that's the case. I mean, it would suck to say goodbye to Zach LaVine, but if you're only taking on 1 year of Chandler Parsons and you can move up from seven to two and you get Ja Morant and you can add Ja to Lowry and to Wendell Carter Jr. and then you can open up more cap space beyond the Parsons deal and even further beyond once Otto Porter sort of expires as well. I think that's something that I'm definitely exploring. So I'd be totally up for that deal. I think Memphis would be kind of crazy to do it. But assuming they are crazy enough to do it, then I'm happy to reap the benefit of it.
Now, let's say, though, let's add a wrinkle to that. Let's say they wanted you to include a future first, maybe with some restrictions on it. Then are you still doing that?
It would really depend on the restrictions because, I mean, as we saw in this lottery specifically, basically teams outside of 8, 9, 10, 11, etc., they jumped up into the top four. So I think the new lottery odds are really going to change how we consider or what teams consider in terms of adding these sorts of pieces into trades, future picks, that is. Because maybe you don't want to do a top five sort of pick anymore or have those sorts of protections because who knows where your pick's going to end up now that the odds are sort of flattened out a bit here. So I don't know. It would have to be somewhat of a heavy protection because as we saw, the Lakers jumped up from number 11, I think it was, up into the top four. So, yeah, you really got to consider you've really got to consider how you want to play or what you want to do in terms of adding in your future lottery picks. I think teams are going to be more hesitant than ever to do so. So I'd have to think about it.
So if you end up keeping the pick though, are you picking based on need or best player available? It sounds like you were going more the best player route.
Yeah, I think the Bulls are still nowhere near in position to say that we should be picking for fit. And I know Paxson sort of mentioned that he has tiers, and when he feels that you know, two players are of the same tier, and the tiebreaker, if you will ultimately be the fit component, which I sort of understand. But at the same time, if there's a player available to the Bulls who's clearly superior to someone who's maybe a better fit, then I would take the player who I think is the better player. So an example of that would be, say, Jarrett Culver versus Coby White. So White probably has the better fit for this current starting unit, given that he could slide into to point guard, whereas Culver would probably have to come off the bench, given that Levine and Porter would be in front of him. But in my opinion, at least, I think Jarrett Culver is a better prospect than Coby White, so I would take Culver, even though he's not necessarily the best fit.
So after the draft, there's some fringe guys that you're going to have on your roster, and one that I want to get to and kind of have you break down a little more in detail is Chris Dunn. What are you doing with Chris Dunn? Are you trying to shop him? Are you just keeping him around to, you know, come off the bench at that point? What are you doing with Chris?
I mean, the Dunn situation is kind of fluid right now. It really ultimately is determined by what you do at the draft and what you do at free agency. So Dunn's under contract for next season. I think you can sort of hit pause on him just for the moment. I think you sort of take care of business at the draft. If you take a point guard, then obviously that has to factor into the Dunn situation. And then if you sign a point guard in free agency, as an example, and your two big transactions are point guards, then that obviously changes the situation with Dunn, where that kind of makes him more expendable, I guess. But if for whatever reason in the draft you were to take a wing and you're not able to necessarily sign the point guard option that you wanted in free agency, then maybe you keep Dunn. So I think it's kind of a fluid situation, but at this point I'm not necessarily wedded to the idea of Dunn being here beyond the season that we just played here. I think it's entirely possible that Dunn has played his last game for the Chicago Bulls, and I think it should be explored in trades. I think it's sort of approaching Alfred Payton levels, where the Magic sort of gave Alfred Payton quite a few years to work it out. They ended up trading him to the Phoenix Suns during his last year of his rookie deal. I think there's a situation here where something similar could be in play for Chris Dunn, assuming he is coming back. So I don't know. I think it's kind of fluid. It's going to be dependent on what the Bulls do in free agency, what they do in the draft, and that doesn't necessarily speak well for Dunn, given that he's sort of teetering on the edge to the point where it's almost the transaction, other transactions that occur outside of him that will determine his fate. But I'm as close to being out on Chris Dunn as I can be without necessarily being fully out.
What are you going to do with also Denzel Valentine? Is this a guy that you want to give some more chances to see if he can at least play, and maybe, you know, you shop him at some point, or are you just maybe seeing what you can get for him now?
Well, I mean, his value is non-existent right now. He's missing an entire season of basketball. He's coming into the final year of his rookie deal. I mean, the best case scenario, you get a second round pick for him, and probably not even a good one at that. So I don't think there's really any value to trading Denzel right now. Maybe you trade him or consider trading him at the deadline if he's able and being able to put, you know, 30 or 40 games under his belt and at least sort of return to somewhat of a similar player as to what we saw in 2017-18. But right now he probably doesn't have any trade value, so I'm giving him the chance to at minimum re-earn or re-up his trade value. But perhaps you don't even think about trading him if he comes back a better player, or at least the player that he was. Maybe you want to keep that player around because I think he has some utility in that instance. But yeah, trading him right now probably doesn't make sense unless you're trying to purely just clear cap space. But I think it probably makes more sense to try to rehab his value if possible.
You just made Fred happy, that's for sure.
Not necessarily. I still don't think he's much good, but yeah.
This is a question that's going to, that also I know draws some reaction from C-Red Fred. So at the, you know, point guard spot, it's all going to depend on what happens in the draft, but you have two on your roster right now. You have Shaq Harrison, Ryan Arcidiacono that can run the point. Are you thinking about keeping Shaq Harrison around? Are you thinking about re-signing Ryan Arcidiacono? I know you're a big fan of him.
I'm a big Arcidiacono fan. I'm sure I'm in somewhat of a minority. Actually, I'm not sure. I'm not sure how those within Chicago feel. I guess that's the one of the drawbacks in being an international fan. It's kind of hard to get a read of what the city feels about Archie Diacono. I could imagine a case where the city sort of is galvanized to that type of player, but at the same time, I could imagine there's a segment that's not really keen on him as well. Correct
well,
me if I'm
Mark,
wrong.
I'll tell you what, Chicago does like some try-hard white guys, and he definitely fits the bill. So, you know, there's fans here that like him.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. I certainly like him. Shaq Harrison, he grew on me towards the back end of the season, but it's kind of hard to get a read of what the Bulls were doing the last month or two because, one, the team was tanking, and two, a lot of teams had sort of given up at that point. So he was getting a lot of minutes, but and he was getting a lot of volume and opportunities at that point, but I'm not necessarily sitting here right now thinking he can be anything more than a third-string point guard. So, I think the point guard position is sort of fluid in general, because if you draft, say, Kobe White and you bring in Patrick Beverley, it kind of becomes an equation of who do you want as that third point guard between Dunn, Archie Diacono, and Shaq Harrison. So I think a lot of that's going to be determined based on, at least for Harrison and Archie Diacono, as to what sort of offers they're receiving for other teams. Obviously, Dunn has a contract, but maybe some team comes to you with a trade package that interests you for Dunn, so maybe that changes things as well. So I think the entire point guard situation is kind of fluid to the point where you're almost leaving the situation with Dunn, Archie Diacono, and Harrison maybe until a week after free agency's opened up, to see how everything's shaping up, see how your roster's shaped out, and to really see what your next move is. But I think if you've brought in a point guard via the draft and you've signed a point guard via free agency, then really what you're looking at is maybe someone as a backup or as a third string guys of the incumbent point guards that are already on the roster. And at that point, depending on who you've brought in, that's who I think you probably need to make the call on who you keep. But like, for example, if you bring in Patrick Beverley, is there much point in keeping Chris Dunn or Archie Harrison around? I don't know, but it almost depends on the type of point guard that you bring in that isn't one of Dunn, Archie Diacono, or Harrison.
I want to get to one last guy before we get into some of the off-season moves. What are you doing with Robin Lopez? Are you thinking about bringing him back on a team-friendly deal, or are you just going to let him go get his money and potentially get onto a contender?
I think ideally you'd want to keep Robin Lopez from a locker room standpoint. I think he's clearly a great veteran to have around a franchise, be it the Bulls or really any. I think he just sort of is malleable, whether you're a rebuilding squad or even a contender. I think he's the perfect guy to have around. So there's a lot of pros to keeping Robin Lopez around. I'm probably letting him sort of go out there, field some offers, see what he can come back. If some team wants to give him a 2-year, I don't know, $16 or $20 million deal, then I'm probably letting him go pretty quickly. I think the Bulls should have a budget of maybe $5 million max on someone like Robin Lopez, because he really is a one-position player at this point, and he's a backup center, given that the team has Wendell Carter in place. So I don't think there's a real dying need for Robin Lopez. If you can bring him back on a number that makes sense, I would do so, but I would be hoping the Bulls are trying to be a little bit more versatile in the front court. I wrote something up on Bloggable maybe a month or so ago about having, you know, floating the idea of bringing back Taj Gibson, because I think he's more of a versatile option than Robin Lopez, where he can be your backup four or backup five, depending on matchups. Mm-hmm. He probably costs you a little bit more than Robin Lopez, but on a 2-year, $16 million deal, I think that makes more sense to me than bringing back Robin Lopez. So I would kind of play the field a little bit, see what options are out there beyond Robin Lopez, and I would also let Lopez, you know, see what he can get out there. Maybe he wants to go to a contender and doesn't necessarily want to be part of this rebuild. So, again, it's kind of a fluid situation there too, but I'd be hoping the Bulls are looking to get maybe a little bit younger, or if not younger, a little bit more versatile.
So to get into the free agency period, you had brought up the name Patrick Beverley, and I'm assuming that, you know, you're going to be attacking the point guard market here. What draws you to Beverly, and what are some other potential point guard options that you would also explore?
Well, I mean, this point guard market isn't great, so I think that's a problem.
Not like Derrick Rose?
definitely not. I would not be exploring bringing back Derrick Rose at all. I think he's not what this team needs at all. So Derrick Rose wouldn't be an option, but this team really needs some defense. It needs some veterans, and it needs some defense. So Paxton has spoken about two of those things. So I'd be very surprised if if Patrick Beverley isn't atop of their list at some point. And I think Beverley just makes a lot of sense because he's not a point guard that needs to dominate the ball. He's a guy that can spot up from the three-point line. He's a very good three-point shooter. He's obviously a clear veteran. He's from Chicago. And he's a two-way player. He's able to guard the point guard position, but as we saw in the playoffs as well, he's guarding Kevin Durant. So you can sort of flip him around between point guard, shooting guard, maybe even small forward as well. So he's more versatile than what you would think a typical point guard would be. So, he just has those advantages that a lot of point guards in this free agency period just don't. I mean, Corey Joseph, Darren Collison, yeah, they're nice bench pieces, but they don't do anything to excite me as such, where I think Patrick Beverley, he's more malleable in that sense. I guess there's options like Malcolm Brogdon as well, but he's going to probably cost too much money to the point where I probably wouldn't want to entertain paying him the amount that he probably will likely command. So I'm kind of focused right now on Patrick Beverley, and that's probably fraught with danger because he's probably not going to be a Bull. Or like, why would he want to come to Chicago when he can play for a contender like the Clippers may end up being? So that's an interesting situation, but I think he needs to be the primary target for the reasons why I noted.
So you also brought up the idea of bringing in somebody like Taj Gibson for veteran leadership. What are some other pieces you might look to? Are you looking for more defensive depth? Are you looking for 3-and-D guys? What are some types of players that you might try and look for to add to the rest of your roster?
Well, I mean, the Bulls right now, they're only, ignoring Cristiano Felicio, but the only front court players that they have signed right now is Larry Markkanen and Wendell Carter Jr. So I think they definitely need some bigs. And I wouldn't necessarily bring in two traditional bigs. As I mentioned before, I'd like to keep things versatile. So that's why I like to keep the idea of having sort of Taj Gibson and having him as your backup five even, and then maybe having a smaller power forward coming off the bench, which you can run in that second unit, or maybe even play Otto Porter in that second unit. So I'd like to see the Bulls throw more lineups out there where they're sort of getting more downsized, more shooting on the floor, and I think that just makes sense for everyone that is on the floor. So I'd be looking at versatile players, shooters, defensive players, definitely, because the Bulls just don't have many of them. I really don't think beyond Otto Porter and maybe Wendell Carter Jr. They're literally the only two-way players on that the Bulls have on the court. I don't think Chris Dunn is a two-way player. Chandler Hutchinson showed some defensive chops, but I don't think his offensive game is anywhere near it. I don't think we can call Larry Markkanen or Zach LaVine two-way players. So even if they're smaller role players, so long as they can do multiple things well, and those multiple things may be just spotting up from three and being respectable on defense. If you can find a player like that, then that would be nice. Not necessarily Etuan Moore, but a player similar to Etuan Moore. Maybe if you could find the next Etuan Moore, that would be really nice to get in, because those players are super valuable, having that sort of two-way player that doesn't kill you when on both sides of the ball. So I'm looking at some front court versatility. I'm looking for that point guard position and maybe some defense, be it in the front court or on the wing.
So as you wrap up your moves for the 2019-2020 season, what are you – you had mentioned this a little earlier, that you want to sort of keep yourself flexible going forward so that you can always be ready for those other moves by grabbing more assets if you can. Is there anybody that you have on your wish list that you would like to keep an eye on the trade market, a name like a Donovan Mitchell, a Damian Lillard? I mean, what kind of players would you be – keeping your eye open for?
Yeah, I mean, this is an interesting question. I mean, I kind of like the idea of not necessarily going in for those older older players. So I mean, once Damian Lillard, for example, would be available, he'd be kind of like a 30-year-old at that point, which probably doesn't make a lot of sense. So I would kind of be looking to add some players maybe going onto the second contract, maybe some restricted free agents, if you've got the ability to sign them. I know there's been a lot of talk about Terry Rozier this week, and he's definitely one name that I would not consider.
No way.
I would be kind of looking for players that necessarily didn't get an opportunity at their first go around, who you can maybe trade for or bring in, and they can become a good player for you. Like an example that just comes off straight at the top of my head is Yusuf Nurkic for Portland. Obviously in Denver, it was a decision between him and Nikola Jokic. Obviously, the Nuggets made the correct decision in going with Jokic, but at the same time, the Blazers were able to swoop in that, and they locked down their full-time starting center. And Nurkic this season, 15-10, and I think 3 or 4 assists a game with a couple blocks and just some really good defense. He was great for them this season. So I don't have a plan as such to land the next star, because it's kind of hard to predict those sorts of things because they randomly come out of nowhere. I mean, who knew that we would be talking about Anthony Davis a few months back? Did we know he was going to hold out the way he did? Go beyond that, Kawhi Leonard. I mean, he was the player that we all thought would never leave the Spurs, but we know what happened there. So it's kind of hard to predict who would be the next star that you would want to, I guess, lock down or reserve as a potential option. But like I sort of mentioned before, I'd be trying to bring in just really good players, which you can accumulate to the point when that star does become available, you have the ability to offer up a package to make a run at that star. A player that I've always really loved is Jaylen Brown. I mean, I don't think you can necessarily trade for him as such, but maybe in free agency, if for whatever reason the Celtics don't want to pay him the amount that he wants, or maybe he's traded for Anthony Davis and maybe the Pelicans don't want to necessarily pay him the amount that he wants, or whatever it may be. I've always liked Jaylen Brown. So I'm thinking these type of players who are coming off their rookie deals, where when you bring him in, be it via free agency or via trade, they're sort of still on the timeline of the current players on the roster. I think that kind of makes more sense than, you know, gathering up 2 or 3 of the current young players, trading for a player who's currently a 4 or 5-time All-Star by the time you get him in, he's probably on his last good legs. That kind of doesn't make sense to me.
So as we wrap up here, I've heard you on your podcast mention that, you know, you're not a title or bust guy, but what would be a target year for you to have a team that's in a form of title contention, you know, at least getting close to the conference finals or, you know, competing in the finals if possible?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a title or bust guy, but at the same time, I'm not going to be content with a 45-50 win team with this current group of Bulls because of the situation that the Bulls sort of gave up to enter this one. So I'm obviously referencing the Jimmy Butler trade here, and just the, you know, even before the Butler trade, just the mismanagement of the roster that led to the Jimmy Butler trade is probably more so what I'm speaking about. That contest, I think, is really important. And I think, you know, because of all the mistakes that were made before that forced you into trading Jimmy Butler, and you could have easily built a 45 or 50 win team around Jimmy Butler to enter a rebuild, to only get back to the position where you could have already been with Butler. I don't think that's good enough, particularly given that it's the same management team that have been in place for the last 15 to 17 years, let's call it. So I don't know if that's good enough. It was good enough with the Baby Bulls because that came from a time when John Paxson came in and was cleaning up Jerry Krause's mess. So when that team sort of jumped up to a 47 or a 49 win team and made the second round of the playoffs, I think that was awesome because we weren't necessarily expecting it. We had a lot of fan equity for Paxson at that point because of the job he was able to do and the way he was able to remodel and clean up that mess. But I don't know if we have that same sort of goodwill for him now, given that I guess he's cleaning up his own mess at this point, which is kind of annoying. So I don't know if a 45 to 50 win team is good enough right now. I think that's probably the most likely scenario. I think in a vacuum, I should, you know, based on what I've said, that I'm not a title or bust, I should be into that team. And maybe I will be, but I won't be to the extent that I was with the Baby Bulls because of what went before it. So I don't know if this squad really has contention in them. I don't know if that can ever come. So I don't know if there's necessarily a timeline of saying it needs to happen in the next sort of 2 to 3 years, because I just don't see
it. Now, you're the man in charge, though. So if it's your team that you're building, I mean, I'm sure you have a certain kind of window that you would want.
Well, I mean, if we think about the players on the roster, Lowry's 21. Wendell has just turned 20. The player you're drafting is going to be a 19 to 20-year-old. Zach LaVine's 24. You're probably giving it maybe 3 to 4 years at least, or at most, rather. But within, basically, once Lowry and Wendell Carter are coming into their second deals, I think at that point you're going to have a pretty clear picture of where the ceiling of this team is. I know the optimistic fan will probably think that there is contention in this into this team. I don't personally see it, but you have to give it at least a few years to see what it can be. again, playing the probability game, which I often do, which I think is what you have to do. I don't see a contender in this team, but unless something else materializes in between, I give this team at least until, say, Lauri Markkanen's 24, 25. And then I'm really assessing at that point, because effectively you're going to be caught at the middle, based on what I'm saying, you're going to be caught in the middle. So at that point, I'm trying to probably package a few of these pieces to maybe try to find that star, assuming it exists, but I don't think it's likely.
And you know what, though? You're keeping things fluid, and I think that's what a lot of really good executives in the NBA do. So you heard it here. That's Mark Karanzulis' rebuilding plan. Mark, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to the Rebuildable Podcast. Be sure to check out more episodes on Google Play, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and on Rebuildable.com.